We'll pretend, a few of us are pretend. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the first school board meeting of the school year. This is Monday, September 10th. It is 7:05. Mrs. Retcher, will you call the roll, please?
Mrs. Fairgreave?
Here.
Mrs. Linkemer?
Here.
Mr. Manheim?
Here.
Mr. McNally?
Here.
Mr. Noling?
Here.
Mrs. Weibel?
Here.
Mrs. Yule?
Yes, here. We are going to have the presentation of the flag. And I don't know if I introduced that. Mrs. Scullis, are you going to introduce the troop?
Thank you. This evening we have several students from PAC 165 who will be leading us in the pledge.
States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much to our Cub Scouts. This is our first meeting of the year. It's always wonderful to be back in schools. Here we are at Pearson Creek School. Today we have a special meeting in that it's a public hearing on the 2018-2019 school budget. So I will now call the public hearing to order. Mr. Chapman, do you have a presentation for us?
Yes, I do. Good evening, members of the board and the community. Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to present to you tonight the fiscal year 2018-19 final budget. As we've all discussed at the board retreat and then some, your objective is really about supporting above average academics at an average cost and supporting high student performance, keeping taxes as low as possible, and maintaining a recognition score on the ISBE, the Illinois State Board of Education Financial Profile Score. So that's some of the guiding principles as we put the budget together. You as a board have achieved several things. Most importantly, the continued trend of having the lowest school district tax rate in Kane County. As you're all well aware, we paid off over $16 million in debt this past year, which has led to, for a $300,000 homeowner, around a $500 average reduction in their tax bill. This budget is aligned to the financial forecast and fully funds our instructional programming. And the good news about the debt service reduction is we have another drop in store, not quite so significant, about $1 million drop next year, which will equate to around about a $30 reduction. We'll talk more about that in October when we have our tax levy workshop. In terms of our budget timeline, you as a board since, you know, May or late spring have been looking at various drafts, and we've had discussion before that. Really, in January, we've had discussions at the administrative level, principal and department head input. It's a very collaborative process, and several versions we've gone through, all bringing us to today for the final budget. So, really, what's left is the public hearing that we're in now, and then you later tonight as a board looking for you to adopt that budget so we can get that to the state. Our budget highlights. We have decreases. Last year we came to you with construction and had pretty significant increases. And now, because of the drop in the debt service levy, we have pretty significant decreases, both on the expenditure and revenue side. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. We'll have an additional year of a total budget, all funds deficit, because of construction. And this will be roughly $14 million. And this is as planned. 2 years ago when we talked about how we would fund construction, that you as a board directed us to look at spending down our fund balance, bringing that into our board policy range of 28% to 34%. The year prior, we were spending money from our debt service extension bond funds and our capital bonds from the state that we had in reserves, and now we're looking to spend down some of that fund balance. We continue to have a perfect 4.0 recognition score. We will have that again next year. That score does not take into account debt service and capital project funds, so that's why we continue to maintain that perfect score. Our total budget with the construction, so all of our funds, I kind of highlight here the $16.8 million deficit in the capital project funds. And I would also note that Fund 20 is really in earnest. It's at balance, but we have to do a fund transfer into Fund 60, much like we did last year. We did transfers. I'll be coming back to you during the school year or during the fiscal year and asking for an approval on transfers again this year. Our big levers from the revenue side, the first two are pretty familiar with you. Consumer Price Index is how we get, as a district, the majority of our revenue. Almost 80% comes from property taxes. So a 1% change is about a $1.5 million up or down on that. And $1 million change in new property growth is about a $50,000 change. The last bullet talks about the funding formula changes. Previously, at the state level, we were under the general state aid, and that was done on a proration at a percentage basis. And part of the language in that approval was to change that proration on a per-pupil basis. I want to be clear that that's not what's expected nor intended for fiscal year 19. We have heard nothing to that level at the state level and don't anticipate that. But if, at some point in the future, they do a proration, $100 per pupil is about $1.2 million to District 303. Here's a look at our consumer price index that we use. We talk about this during our five-year projections in January every year when we forecast out where we think we're going not only for 1 year but for 5 years. You can see 2013 to 2016, those were unprecedented years, the first time in the history of this country that we had four consecutive years under 2%. We now are looking at just slightly above 2%, and as we look and trend ahead to the future, CPI should be probably more in the 2.5% range, but we trend at the 10-year average at 2%. New AAV growth was certainly a lack of growth for several years, as you can see, and we've ramped up and had about $25 million last year. We continue, as new homes are built, as additions are done in the district, we expect that to rise in the future as well. Our revenue assumptions, really the big story here is the state. Last year, we did an amended budget, as you're all aware, and part of that amendment was due to receiving well over our state allocations when they switched from the general state aid to the evidence-based model. And essentially what they did at the state level was they moved some of the categorical funds, an example of that would be transportation reimbursement, but some of the other ones that remained, some of the other ones like personnel reimbursement, for example, moved into this now what's called the evidence-based model. So we have an increase of over $4 million at the state level there. That is slightly offset by reductions in the categorical grants. We not only expect less money in that category because the money shifted into the EBM model, but we also are seeing delays in that funding. The state has clearly prioritized funding the evidence-based model money at 100%, which they did last year, above and beyond timely payments on the categorical grant side. So this is a new chart that you haven't seen before. We were slated to talk about this at the board retreat, but kind of ran out of time. And this kind of illustrates the point. The total dollars off here is our total state money back in 2014. And the blue line is our categorical grants. And that yellowish-orangish line is our general state aid monies. So as we looked at 2014 and skip ahead 2 years, we kind of had a low point in state funding in fiscal year 16. And as we come ahead here to fiscal year 18, this past year, we're back up to $15.5 million, and that was driven by that sharp increase in the evidence-based model, which coincided, of course, with this drop on the categorical side. So here's where we think we're going to be, and this is what drives the largest increase in our budget from the revenue side. So all funds, we have a decrease, as you can see, and I did also want to add that our operating funds, if you just looked at took out the debt service, took out the capital, the outlay, the construction fund 60, it's a 2.26% increase. Now, that's compared to the amended budget. If you look at our original budget in 17-18, it's about 4.9%, but that is really solely driven by that state revenue. So we're up at about 6.8% this year. Last year, we're at 5.5%, roughly. On the expenditure side, our big levers, these almost look identical to last year. We've had very, you know, steady, stable salaries and health insurance, so I'm not going to go too far into this. The last bullet, just to remind everyone, we're talking about average class size. So if we were you as a board were to direct us to reduce or increase district-wide, that would be about $1.6 million up or down. So speaking about class size, we talked a lot about that as we looked at the school closing and the boundaries, and you as a board, by making that decision, we're able to increase the number of sections we have, which actually drove down the FTE required, the attendance, the students per classroom. That, coupled with the fact that we added staff, have actually brought that number down from 23.7 was the average last year, down to 22.1, so 1.6. I think a year ago when we were talking about this, we were thinking it would probably be in the low ones, like a 1, 1, 1, 2. So it's actually gotten better results than we even had anticipated. So that's part of this budget process. It's embedded into it. Salary increases, we are in the final of 3 years with our bargaining groups, not just our teachers, but our maintenance staff as well, maintenance and transportation, and then our support staff are also a part of that. So we'll start negotiating this year, but for this year it's a known what those percentages are, and they're all at 3% or lower for this year. This was a change to 1.5% from last year. We talked about this at the committee level several times. We don't anticipate any shifting of the TRS obligations from the state to the district at this point. Things may change after the election in November, but we are kind of hedging against potential shifting for future years. And we also talked about technology and operations increases when we looked at our five-year forecast. Those are embedded, included in this budget. Health insurance continues to be the largest on an individual line item percent increase, and right now we're targeting about a 6% increase. So our expenditures, our projections are for an all funds decrease of 7.52%, again driven by that drop in the tax, the property tax, down from roughly $22 million to $6 million. On an operating funds, that increase looks like 0.94% when we compare that to the amended budget. So again, we pull out the debt service, pull out the capital outlay, and it's just under 1%. I think it's noteworthy here, especially in the expenditure side, to mention that last year our increase from the prior year in the operating funds was less than a tenth of a percent, at 0.05%. Our bond payment schedule, here you get a good shot of that big drop-off, kind of where that star is, dropping down here. This is last year's tax levy. This upcoming tax levy for the taxes paid in 2019 will show that additional roughly $1 million that I mentioned earlier. So this is our 11-year chart. You're very familiar with this graph that kind of shows you where we come from and where we're going. And this is fiscal year 2019. And you can see that $14 million roughly drop, and that puts us still in a good position. We always focus on that purple line at the bottom. As long as we stay at a high enough level and stay positive there, that means we're not having to issue tax anticipation warrants, which is much more efficient for taxpayer dollars. So as we get out to those last couple years and do our projections again, and we'll do that in January, we'll refine these numbers and bring them back to you. So next steps tonight, you as a board will have on your agenda to adopt the budget. And after that, our administration will file the budget with both DuPage and Kane County, and we'll post those on our website. Any questions on the D303 portion?
I'll just do it in order. I would like to ask if there are any public comments or questions. You do not need to have signed up beforehand, so if anyone in the public has a comment or question at this time.
Yeah, just curious if the proposed budget was posted anywhere publicly on the website. I was able to find it in some of the minutes, but we posted somewhere publicly where it's easily accessible. Hard time sort of finding. So
sure.
Just curious if that was available.
Yeah, it's in board book. The committee, once it goes through committee and the board, it gets posted immediately into board book, and that's how you'd access it online. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Good. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Next, board members, do you have any comments or questions? We've heard this, as you pointed out, on the calendar. It's. I was really interested in some of the percents that you had as far as class size, how it relates to the budget decreases or increases, the very slight ones. I was wondering which categorical grants were most affected in the state's recent change?
Yeah, it's really much more of a timing issue than anything else. So the two pieces are, one, there are now less categorical dollars, right, because some of that shifted into the evidence-based model. And it really kind of flip-flopped. We had about two-thirds coming out of categoricals and one-third in the evidence-based. Now it's two-thirds out of evidence-based, one-third out of categorical. But the primary categoricals now are related to transportation. They're the regular and special ed. And it's not that we're not getting those funds. It's that we're typically getting them 3 to 6 months or more beyond when they're due.
So you would not consider the special education grants that we get. They're not categoricals. Not grants,
correct,
but the payments.
Yeah, so FFCS, the funding for children with special needs, that moved into the evidence base. I think that was their focus, is to try to move that and the personnel reimbursement, for example, into the evidence base mm-hmm. model and then fund that fully. So okay. We haven't seen any problems on that side. So,
however, the upshot is we went from 5.5% to 6.8% contribution from the state.
Yes, as yes. a percentage of our total
Which
budget,
is
correct.
Still not the majority of the funding coming from the state by a long shot. But
correct.
Okay, that was good to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Any other board members? Well, thank you very much. We've been really well informed all along the process. I think we're certainly ready to vote tonight. So thank you for all your time in preparing
thank you.
And now I will close this hearing and move back into the regular meeting. Not the regular meeting, the same public hearing. I'm sorry, the same public hearing for the Mid-Valley Special Education Co-op. Do you have a presentation for us?
I do, yes. This one will be relatively brief. Nothing really has changed too much. You heard from Nancy Spohr at the Business Services Committee meeting, so I'll try to move quickly. Mid-Valley is a special education cooperative made up of the Tri-City districts along with Burlington and Caneland, and they offer program services as well as itinerant services to our district along with the other four member districts. Their budget actually starts even earlier than ours because we rely upon their budget to set ours, especially on the special education side, of course. So tonight, same process. We're looking for your input and your approval on their hearing as the fiscal agent for the cooperative. Again, the trend is similar with the cooperative, a decrease of 4.29%. They've had fairly stable staffing and enrollment over the last year. The program per student cost has risen slightly, but not too significantly, as you can see on the screen. They also received, the co-op, Mid-Valley also receives evidence-based funding, and that money gets flowed right back through to the districts. Again, primarily that's personnel reimbursement. They also have offset revenue in their budget that they put in their programs, Medicaid, ALOP, and some of the grants that you see up on the screen. Overall, very much heavily focused or relying upon the local sources, much like a traditional district, but they receive their local sources in the form of tuition bills. Also, the IDA grant is a large portion of their budget, as you can see. On the expenditure side, a 3% increase is what their staffing is set at. They're part of the same health insurance benefits as we are, so that's at a 6%. Operations and technology, you can see some of the investments they're making there. On the capital side, they've now paid off, a couple years ago they paid off the Mage Johnston Center, so they've looked to improve some of their science labs, and similar to us, focused on safety and security on the vestibule windows and door locks. So on their expenditure side, the salaries and benefits slightly over half, and then IDA flow through monies would come through the rest of the portion to make up the majority of their budget. And this is just a slide to look at their budget history. Typically very, very close and very accurate to their budget every year. You can see the enrollment stayed fairly similar, just slightly down, but year over year, typically very close to what they budget. So that's all I have. Any questions?
I do have a question. Can you, Dr. Chapman, can you mm-hmm. just repeat again the per pupil increase from last year to this year? Missed it.
The per pupil on the Mid-Valley side? Yeah. So there they are. The cost per student, $39,250. From $37,961, so what, $1,200, $1,300. And then on the program side, $25,584 to $25,339, a couple hundred dollars.
And I would just clarify, that's average because it varies per student need.
Yes, and these are what they set their program budgets at the beginning, and then there's a true-up, and there's a reconciliation process at the end of the year. So it's a very fluid program for the co-ops. They get students coming in and out throughout the year, and so we as a member district typically receive some kind of a reimbursement or credit at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, you had the number of students. Is that the number of students that they project, or is that the number at the end of the year?
I believe that's your starting point. Is that correct, Nancy?
The last slide that we saw.
I see what you're saying.
I was just wondering, those are absolutes.
In the prior year? Yeah.
I imagine.
Yes.
But I just wondered if it was what they projected every year, and then that would be constant, you know, a constant.
So there's I'm not sure if I'm misunderstanding, but there. Yeah. So you've got projected and final up there.
You know what? I didn't see the second.
Yeah,
row.
So that's
okay.
Kind of, that gives you an idea
got
of where
it.
They
I'm sorry.
Tend to finish.
Projected, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's good.
Okay, I'll go back to our format. I will ask for any public comments or questions from the public. Once again, you need not have signed up beforehand.
Question. In both presentations, it talked about the health care and the cost, the premiums and stuff. How often does the district look at re-upping relationships with other carriers to see in this competitive world where insurance companies are almost making money? How often is the district looking at other benefit packages to see for saving money?
Yeah, that's a great question. We meet quarterly. We have a district-wide insurance committee that meets, and it's made up of representation from our union teachers, and we also have a health insurance broker that we work with. We RFP'd their services 3 years ago, and we work very closely with them to look at our plan design and bring opportunities to reduce our costs on a regular basis.
Are there any other questions? No? Thank you. Board members, do you have any comments for Mr. Chapman? Dr. Chapman? None heard. I'll now close this public hearing for the Mid Valley budget for 18-19. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Next, we will change course a little bit, and we will have some student presentations.
Well, thank you. As you've already mentioned, we're here at Pearson Creek tonight, and we are happy to introduce to you Dr. Kelly Scullis, our principal here at Pearson Creek, and she will be introducing the students that will be participating in our program this evening.
Thank you, Dr. Pearson. Welcome on behalf of the students and staff here at Pearson Creek, and I'm pleased to have this opportunity to host the September board meeting. When presented with the opportunity to host, the first thing that really came to my mind is what is currently 524 students, and those are the students who walk through our doors each day. And as I think about those students, we are really afforded the opportunity each day to grow their strengths. And here at Pearson Creek, we have students as young as 3 years old and students who are 11 years old as our students begin to transition and prepare for middle school. And as I think about growing their strengths, one of the things that we have really focused on as a staff is strengthening our capacity to support our students and really working to be responsive and purposeful in our planning and our instruction, to be professional in our practice, and also to set an environment that allows students to feel safe, both emotionally and physically, and to be able to take risks in their learning. As we reflected on preparing for this evening's presentation, we recognize there are students within our learning environment who will hold jobs in the future that are likely very different from the jobs that we hold today, and there are probably jobs out there that we haven't even dreamed up at this point. So what better way than to have Renee Ignafo, our Learning Resource Center Director, as well as three of our students, Damon Hill, Lucas Reed, and Alicia, and I'm going to have trouble with Alicia's last name, Shamwell, thank you. Three of our students, along with Mrs. Ignafo, to spend some time sharing some things about the learning that's taking place here at Pearson Creek that is very different than when we were all in kindergarten through fifth grade. At this time, I'd like to welcome Renee and the other students.
Hello, I will start with taking a look at the design process. We have here first graders making some paper beads that out of some scrap paper that otherwise would be destined for the recycle bin. We've had fifth graders making LED cards using a closed circuit, which I can show you in a moment. Beyond Project Lead the Way, our students solve engineering design problems. So here we have some first graders designing a structure that can support weight. Kindergartners teach us about chick eggs, and second graders teach us about the life cycle of a butterfly through some innovative video production.
I am a baby chick. In my egg, I am a germ spotted, but then I grow to a chick. When I am hungry, I eat my yolk. Four in three, two,
oops.
One.
Actually,
go.
You can,
I am a baby chick.
You can go to the butterfly. So they had fun making those videos. Can you advance me? My clicker's not advanced. The green screen helps our students creatively make their learning visible. And here our kindergartners dropped onto a farm to share what they know about chicks. Well, very fun project as well. Here you see some projects our third and fourth graders created using the 3D printer. They created artifacts about the U.S. regions or world cultures that they were studying. A project that we have going on this year with fifth graders is to create some prosthetic. So here I have a finger that we've already created. And when you walked in, we were printing the palm. And you see the little girl down in the corner, she was a recipient of a 3D printed prosthetic that was sent to her. So we will donate our time, our filament, and this whole packet is their technical reading to put together all of the parts that will make up a hand. So that is one of our projects for this year. And then we'll ship it off to Enable. It's called Enabling the Future, where it will be fitted for a child. And then we also have our students writing code. And here you see some fifth graders collaborating to write a digital story using Scratch and Blockly programming. It's a way of computer programming. And we have kindergartner who is also writing code to navigate our Codapillar. And we have put out many of our robots here over on the side of the room for you to take a look at. Putting across the content area, these girls were charged with moving the BeeBot through the maze, so they were calculating how far one forward movement is, and they determined that one forward movement equals 15 centimeters, so they knew exactly then how many forward movements and turns they needed to make to get through the maze. In the upper corner, you see our first graders very excitedly practicing some spelling using the BeeBots. Our fifth graders are going to share some advanced coding with you.
this? Oh, okay. We were challenged to write strands of code to autonomously park a robot. After we built the robot and made sure the wires were connecting the correct motor to the corresponding wheel, we had to calculate how far the robot would travel with one rotation. We measured the diameter of the wheel and multiplied by pi to get the circumference.
Then we had to write code with the precise number of rotations and the correct commands to complete the tightest turn and autonomously park our robot without driving off the road or hitting a parked car. Sometimes we had to use a 1/100th of a rotation.
These are the strands of code we wrote, and now we would like to demonstrate how our EV3 robot autonomously parked three different ways. And this is the code. Awesome.
Share what she has learned from this experience.
I think that this experience would help us for when we are older and would help us learn how to drive and when we do our driver's ed.
I'm loving that. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. We hear about this at the board table and at learning and teaching, but this is the first time we've ever seen what's going on in the Project Lead the Way classes. And thank you very much. We really appreciate it. I'm going to take a second here because we had a number of students here and a number of proud parents and teachers, and I wanted to acknowledge them. So thank you, orchestra students that were here. They might not be in here now, but Ella Jordahl, Danny Maxwell, and Cooper Mellican. Our PAC 165 was Charlie Hodge, Logan Hill, Matthew Rancor, Lucas Reed, and Wyatt Teet. Our students in fifth grade are Damon Hill, Lucas Reed, and Alicia Shemwell. So thank you very much for coming and showing us all these things today. It was very, very exciting. Board members, do you have any comments for our students? Where do we begin, right?
They're all parked better than me.
That we're so early in the school year, and yet there's already so much learning evidence going on here, and it's wonderful. And you know, you feel like we've only been in school a little bit of time, just a few days. How can there be so much going on? But it's because we have a great staff here and great kids and great parents. So thank you for having us tonight and inviting us in. It was great to come out.
I just can't believe how much it's evolved over 10 years when I had a child here. So the Project Lead the Way is really an awesome technology advancement, and it's awesome. It's such a great opportunity for the kids, and we appreciate your dedication and showing them, you know, all the different opportunities, because as they continue to excel, they're going to have so much more available to them. So it's pretty neat. I was just thinking about when we were here, we were, you know, focused on throwing boo bash and different. I'm sure that still probably still goes on, but
sure they still have that.
Yeah.
And actually now they've got some prosthetics that look like maybe creepy little that finger looked kind of
it's really amazing. Great job.
It is. Anyway, I know we have you were a fierce and parent also, weren't you?
I was. Both of my daughters graduated, if you will, from Pearson. So it's great to be back. And I'm not surprised at all. I think it's a very innovative leadership team and teaching staff, and just great work.
Yeah. Thank you. That was wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Scullis. We really appreciate it. All right. Thank you very much. And we will go on to citizen comments. But Dr. Schloman used to say at about this time that parents, if you felt like it was time to get going, don't feel that you have to stay. But you're very welcome to stay and see what a school board meeting looks like now. But if it's time for you to leave, don't feel funny about walking out. Thank you for coming. Good. The next item on the agenda are citizen comments. We have three citizen comments today. Mrs. Lincoln, would you read our statement?
The school code provides for a public comment period at each board meeting subject to reasonable constraints. The practice of this board is to limit public comment to 3 minutes per speaker to a total of 30 minutes per meeting. Speakers addressing the board are expected to maintain a reasonable level of civility. Also, personnel matters are sensitive and confidential. Comments regarding individuals should be respectful. Insults and defamatory remarks have no place in this setting. The board will terminate public comment if speakers cannot adhere to these guidelines. Please identify yourself at the beginning of your remarks.
Thank you, Mrs. Linkemer. Our first speaker today is Danielle Penman, speaking on accountable and health advisory. Welcome.
Thank you. Technology didn't work, so I have to read from my phone. Don't mind me. I just wanted to come and talk today, and based on events from last school year and the closing of Fox Ridge, a spark was ignited, and many more people are paying attention and getting more involved and interested as members and parents as a result of last year's school board meetings and things that were proposed and went through. I discussed last time I stood before the board at one of those meetings that there needed to be some healing of relationships and building trust again. As of yet, I haven't really witnessed that, and I hope that going forward, that relationship is built and trust is reinstilled in this district. I would also hope, and I publicly appeal to this board and administration, to change the way you interact with the public. I don't think this format is conducive to having dialogue. The public speaking, no interaction, meetings continued, and then afterwards there's no chance for the public to re-speak. I think it's very important for the relationship of this district with the parents and their constituents to have dialogue and communication. So I know there are some set bylaws, but they're very loose. And I would hope that we can increase the communication to help those relationships and build that trust again. And as a community, we're going to start holding people more accountable. We're going to hold the administration more accountable, board members more accountable for the things that you're saying and doing, to whether it's being an administrator in the position that you're in or sitting in a board member chair. This district, these students especially, deserve that, and we want to see accountability, and we want to see better transparency. On that note, I want to shift to something that's really of most important to me, as I really would like to request a health advisory board be created to address the health concerns in this district. Bullying, drugs, alcohol abuse, vaping, a rise in sexually transmitted diseases, a rise in teen suicide rates, hunger and obesity are among some of the health concerns facing our children, and we need to act immediately. The time to hide these problems is over. This is an epidemic crisis that we're in, and I really hope moving forward it becomes a main focus in this district. I was told that there is a wellness committee, but it doesn't meet often, and I don't know what it is consistent of, but I think we need an advisory panel, health panel, with parents, community members, students, so that as the adults and educators and health professionals in this district and around the area, that we can help our children, because what they're facing today is nothing to compare to what we had to face. And it's a major problem. It really is. It's a very serious problem. And there's no shame in it. We have to admit that there's a problem and help our kids. Thank you.
Thank you. Someone from the administration will address your specific questions, especially regarding, I would say, regarding board dialogue, not bylaws, but laws that we have to abide by. And your other things are taken into account. Our second speaker is Michelle Thompson on a parent advisory board. Welcome.
Hi. Michelle Thompson. Over the summer, I attended meetings and spoke to neighboring districts and boards to understand their procedures. A majority of their information is available to constituents on their website without FOIA request, including regular community engagement meetings, advisory boards, and online forums that they offer. Here are some of the things I found. All meetings, including committee, were recorded and posted to the sites. Meetings provided citizen comments at the beginning and at the end of the meeting. Public comments were discussed and put on the agenda. Enrollment by school grade section was posted to the website every year. 5-year strategic plans, curriculum, capital, etc., were posted on the website with budget items and action items included, and these were not considered internal planning documents. No large construction projects or school closings would be mentioned before forming an advisory board or committee at least a year prior, and there would be lots of discussion before big decisions. Districts with healthy budgets focused more on student academic growth and less on capital projects. We are asking for 3 parent advisory boards, one for elementary, one for middle, one for high school. Elementary school needs its own advisory board because we have 12 schools, and we need representation from all schools in the community, not just one school representing all of us. In addition to that, middle school and high schools have very specific and more complex curriculum and SEL needs, as we just heard. Policy indicates that academic presentation should occur at regular meetings with data by school, and initiatives for improvement for the following year based on the data. D303 has a surplus and a healthy budget. It should be used to identify and improve student academic growth. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. The board recognized those comments. Thank you. The third speaker is Zach Luchenko, speaking on class size, communication, and capital projects.
I tried to keep it small.
Welcome. Yeah, it's very small.
No, and I apologize. I like to come to these meetings and have very specific asks of the board or of administration. I don't have that today, so you're going to get to enjoy my musings and some observations here for a couple minutes. The first one, and Michelle mentioned it a little bit, was some of the transparency. And again, I know we've talked about this over the entire last year. We recently, through the FOIA request, got the enrollment numbers for this year. That was something I've talked with administration about months prior at several board meetings. I was told that we would be able to get that without a FOIA request. When I made that request verbally and in person, I was told that that was still a planning document. Again, something that wasn't going to be given to me. We had to go through the FOIA process. I know that costs the district money that could be spent for better purposes, and I'd like to see you guys push that information to the public rather than have us ask for it every single time. I think there's a lot of information. We live in an open world today. This shirt here that looks a little silly is the company I work for. We work in the open source software world. And that's really the trend that we're seeing in businesses is acting in a much more open and transparent manner. And so I'd love to see our district sort of take the lead in that. As a result of getting some of those numbers, some things jumped out at me. Number one, we've got 16 sections with 26 or 27 students in them. Okay, 11 of those fall in kindergarten through third grade, where we really should be focusing. And unfortunately, most of those large class sizes, again, better than last year, and I applaud you all for your efforts in reducing the class size. I think we did some good things. I don't think the work is over. And so I want to encourage you all to not lose sight of that, right? Let's see if we can, especially for those younger children. I have self-interest in that. I've got a third grader and a kindergartner at Bell Graham. Frankly, my students aren't impacted by this. It's other kids across the district that are being put in those 26 and 27 student classes. Now, that's all juxtaposed against, and again, I don't want to get into this, bashing other schools, but there is a single school within this district that has small class sizes, drastically smaller than the rest of the district. We're not treating these kids the same way across the district. From where I came from in public education, that was the goal, to provide a medium level of support to all these kids. Everyone's getting the same sort of, you know, abilities, investment in their future. And it doesn't seem like that's the case based on the numbers that I've seen. Happy to have conversations with you all about that, you know, sort of offline. Again, don't want to air the dirty laundry here in public. And then the last piece is I think the only member that was at the board retreat. It was some riveting content, but I enjoyed, you know, sort of listening to that with you all. The one thing that jumped out at me that brings a concern to me and that I hope the board can take a look at and consider was, you know, we're not completed with a capital project at the middle school. We're already looking at architectural plans were brought up and drawn up for the next project. Let's focus back in on the education. Capital projects are great, but ultimately we're here to focus in on education. And my concern, and I'm new to the district here, only my fourth year having kids in the district, is we're spending way too much time, effort, money, and resources on those capital projects. And those look great, you know, in the papers and in photograph opportunities, but it doesn't really have nearly as much impact to the kids as focusing in on new curriculum, investing in teachers, and making sure that their education is being furthered. So again, no real specific ask today. I'm hoping that I get an opportunity to digest this a little bit further and be back in front of you all at future meetings, but hopefully those are some things you all can take into consideration. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Klitschenko. That concludes citizen comments today. Our next item on the agenda is the superintendent's report. Dr. Pearson.
Well, we've had quite a bit of time this evening to celebrate and recognize some of the work here at Pearson Creek. So I would just like to highlight a couple of things for you, for your information. As of today, our enrollment is about where we thought it would be. We're down about 238 students overall in the district compared to this time last year. Just under 1,200 students, so 1,849 students, kindergarten through 12th grade. That does not include early childhood. Early childhood is counted separately, but if you look at that, that's about where we thought we would be, and we continue to be on track there. I wanted to highlight just a couple of events for you at the high school level. As you know, we have an incubator open house on Monday, the 24th of September at North High School. It's at 3 o'clock, and on Tuesday, September 25th at East High School. As you know, this is a program that involves numerous community volunteers partnering with our students in our entrepreneurship program. And so it's an opportunity to go and see that facility and hear a little bit about the program and then also meet some of our volunteers as well. So we encourage you to come if you have the opportunity to attend at that time. And then I also would just like to mention that we have homecoming coming up. Next week is East High School's homecoming on September 21st. The parade is at 1 o'clock downtown. We're still in discussions with the city about the construction, so we'll see how that goes. But we are having a parade at 1 o'clock. And then North's is in October, so I can remind you about that then. That's October 19th. And then I also just wanted to mention that we do have Kickathon this month. It's on September the 28th. It's at the East and North football game, which will be at North High School. And as you know, this is a huge community fundraiser event sponsored by jointly between both high schools by our drill teams. And so this is a good opportunity if you're available to come to that as well. So those are the kind of highlights. Yes, Ms. Fairgreave.
I had one. Could you recap back on the enrollment? So we're down 238 students. How does that compare to our projection?
Yes, that's a great question. I don't have my projection right in front of me. I'll have to send it to you. I simply took today's enrollment and then last year on today and compared them. So last year we had 12,087, and then we were at 1,189 today. Now, if you remember at the board retreat, we were off by two students on our projection. So I'll double check that, but it's probably in that less than 10 number.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Board members, it's time for committee reports. I think I'll start with learning and teaching. Did you meet in that time frame? Our meetings are, well, please.
We actually had for the first time in a while, relatively short meeting. It started out, Joe Blomquist spoke to the administration, thanked them for their leadership during the remodeling process at Thompson, appreciated by the faculty. Recognitions. Social studies teachers from throughout the district attended the summer 2018 social science implementation courses. The major items for discussion, the first was ALOP, the Alternative Learning Opportunity Program in Knight School. and Aubrey Shute presented on that. Number of courses has increased steadily since 2014-15 school year through the 2017-18 year, as has our success rate. Purpose of the ALOP is for the at-risk of failure intervention beyond the regular school program. We have at North, the models that we're following right now, we have three periods with a 0.6 employee and a 0.2 coordinator, meaning that's 6/10 of a full-time employee. At East, we have five periods, one full-time and a 0.4 coordinator. State funding for ALOP is per student. Location for night school this year is at East, and we are allowing Mid-Valley students in on a tuition basis. The other major presentation was social-emotional learning update, and Patty Pelagi presented that. We are using FastBridge, and I was trying to get the acronyms for these, but it's an app, FastBridge Sabres, and the other diagnostic tool is SSIS-SEL. I don't know what those mean, but in any event, those are the tools we're using for diagnostics. So they're the general tools that are used for that. The focus for the social emotional learning is on self-management and self-awareness. Pre-K social workers created the SEL standards, targeted lessons using goal areas of focus, and identified the tool to monitor growth toward the goals. In D303, we're working on bullying prevention, school climate and culture at the middle school level, suicide prevention, crisis response process, and our community supports are there's a parent university topic was on angst, raising awareness around anxiety, and we also have some assistance from Creekwood Associates, who is providing sessions for school-based mental health professionals. And that was the shortest meeting we've had in a while. We are meeting next Monday at 5:30, the 17th. Social studies, the social studies course descriptions, foreign language update, and the seal of biliteracy are the three topics we have. Tentatively, we are going to be discussing learning-centered spaces, essentially talking about innovative learning, things like makerspace and things like that. And that's a tentative item for the meeting. If we don't do it this month, we will do it in October.
So, why wouldn't we do it this month? They might not be ready for us.
One of the presenters has had some availability issues. So.
Thank you.
All right.
Good. Thank you. Next, we have business services.
Thank you. We met on August 28th. And as always, we led off with the Mid-Valley Financial Report as well as the D303 Financial Report, and those are in your packet for information. Our next item and our only item on action from Business Services is a resolution for the maximum allowable expense. And just as a note, this is the maximum allowable, not the actual amount that will be reimbursed, and that's based on the circumstances and the different sites and everything. So, but it's something we have to, by law, do every year. So. This is our yearly action item. Then our next item is on for consent, and that was a review of quotes for the makerspace. And that's something we're going to be, as Mr. McNally talked about, taking a deeper look at, is all of our makerspaces and seeing where we are. But this is the furniture for Anderson, and this is on for consent tonight. Our next item, Dr. Chapman gave us a PTAB update. There's only one company seeking to lower their assessed value, and Dr. Chapman gave us a kind of our yearly update on where that is. And as always, we work with the other St. Charles Park District and the city and everything, and it's an intergovernmental agreement to challenge those. And that's for information. Our next item was the Norris Rec Center Advisory Board update, which I'm still a part of, and so Dr. Chapman gave us a little update, but things continue to go well there. Numbers are up and programs are up and everything's good. So good thing over at Norris Center. And then our last item was a construction update. Mr. Lamp gave us an update on Thompson. As most of us saw, we started the new school year in half of the building, and the second half continues on schedule. So, and that's it.
another tidy meeting.
It was tidy.
Yes. I don't think policy met. I know policy didn't meet, and I don't think community relations met. Do you have any other report?
No, I was going to announce our meeting, though.
Oh, please.
Okay. So we have a community relations meeting on Tuesday, September the 25th at 5:30 p.m. So that will be our first meeting for the year.
Did anyone have anything else? No, things will start to rev up now with DPTO and everything. I did go to the intergovernmental meeting on August 9th, so essentially everything that they really talked about at that meeting, including the fact that the bridge might be done, that's all old news and not too helpful. There really wasn't too much substance, but I did want to note that it was held at the public library, and this year the public library celebrated with us the 30th anniversary of their student art show that they hold every year. You might have seen this in different places, and I didn't realize it was 30. I didn't realize it was 30 years. I think that's very commendable of them. And I was lucky enough. We talked about it before that my student was in it once, and there are a lot of proud. I think you had a student too, one of your children in the art fair. No, not in that one. Okay, I'm sorry. But it's a wonderful thing that they do to open the library up, provide refreshments, have staff there for students to celebrate their work. And 30 years, that was something pretty remarkable, I think. So I want to thank the St. Charles Public Library. Okay, that concludes committee reports. We'll now move to the four action items. May I have a motion on the adoption of the fiscal year 2018-19 Community Unit School District 303 budget?
So moved.
Mr. Mannheim?
Second.
Ms. Weibel, I kind of heard. Yeah.
Second.
She seconded the motion. Is there any further discussion? Does anyone have any comments they want to make on the budget before we vote? As I said before, thank you very much to the administration and to Dr. Chapman for providing us a budget that I think we can feel very good about and feel good about where the numbers are and then lay that against the high academic achievement that we have as part of our direction to them. So thank you. In that case, Ms. Ratchford, will you take the roll, please?
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Linkemer.
Yes.
Mr. Mannheim.
Yes.
Mr. McNally.
Yes.
Mr. Nolan.
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Birkley?
Yes.
Mrs. Hill?
Yes, the motion carries unanimously. I would also like to ask for a motion on the adoption of the fiscal year 2018-19 Mid-Valley Special Education Cooperative budget.
Hello.
Mr. Mannheim, and a second?
Second.
Ms. Birkley, thank you. Does anyone have any comment on this? Further comment? Thank you. That also seems to be a well-run group and budget also. Would you take the roll, please?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mannheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mr. Nolan?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreave?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkemer?
Yes.
Mrs. Yule?
Yes, the motion carries. And our last is, may I have a motion on the resolution for the maximum allowable expense employee reimbursement?
So moved.
Mrs. Linkemer and Mr. Mannheim is a second. I would just comment that that's the last item that Mr. Mannheim was just talking about as maximum allowable. So, not any other discussion? None heard. Would you take the roll, please?
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mr. Nolan?
Yes.
Ms. Weibel?
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreave?
Yes.
Mrs. Linkemer?
Yes.
Mr. Mannheim?
Yes.
Mrs. Hewell?
Yes, the motion carries unanimously. Our next item is the consent agenda. Does anyone wish for anything to be removed from the consent agenda?
I don't really know how to handle the regular meeting that I was absent at. So yeah. If that has to be removed, or how are we going to do that from a procedural perspective?
We've just been noting an abstention.
On that portion, that's fine.
Yes.
That's fine. Also, like the personnel report. Well,
so be it. That's C. Does anyone else have anything?
It's Mid-Valley.
I'm saying B. Thank you.
Okay.
Anyone else? Okay. So may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda with one abstention? May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda with the D-303 personnel report removed. That was Mrs. Linkmore and Mr. Noling. Mm-hmm. So that was the motion. We just have to take a vote. Okay. Mm-hmm. Any discussion on the agenda without item B? Nothing? Okay. Would you take the roll, please?
Mr. Noling.
Yes.
Ms. Weibel.
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreen.
Yes.
Mrs. Linkmore.
Yes.
Mr. Manheim.
Yes.
Mr. McNally.
Yes.
Mrs. Yule.
Yes, the motion carries. Now, may I have a motion to consider the personnel report?
So moved.
Mr. McNally and Mrs. Linkmore. Do you have a discussion or do you just wish to?
I do have a discussion.
Yes, please.
Am I on? I don't know if I
push the button.
I got a red button. Okay, now I'm on. What's the one on the right?
Don't press the button.
I think that's Molly.
Okay. My apologies. I don't really have anything specific to the report per se, other than I was interested as I looked through it at the varying levels of experience that we had for some of the teachers that we were hiring. And it got me to thinking about, you know, the hiring practices that we have. You know, we spend millions of dollars training folks on the district, and you know, a lot to take who we bring on board and move them forward and make them more capable. And I don't know that I've ever had a discussion at the board level about, so you know, who are we bringing on board? And you know, I also think that as I look, I think there are probably spots or teachers that are, you know, there's probably and I'm not going to name any, but there are probably some that are easier to fill and some that are more challenging to fill. And, you know, I wondered if it might not be helpful for the board to have some data around what our sort of puts and takes have looked like in the past. Like, we've lost, this is an area where we seem to have a lot of turnover, or this is an area where we have a hiring profile that we really want to, you know, to try to achieve. And yet we have a difficult time doing that because the market for those types of teachers is so tight. And I think that, you know, getting some of that data and information at the board level might be helpful to then say, okay, well, if that's the case, if we do have challenges or, you know, areas, you know, are there innovative ways where we could potentially enhance our relationship so that we have, you know, a wider net and a more consistent outreach to the types of teaching programs or whatever that might support them. So I wanted to pull the report to say, you know, I think that might be something that's worthy of board consideration. And just, I thought I would throw the idea out there as we think about the personnel report. Are there places where we feel like, you know, it would be very interesting to know if we have, you know, and I can think, you know, a lot of times if you have specialized teachers, those might be more challenging to get, you know, but I don't know that. I don't know that absent the data. And I think it would be helpful to have that at the board level and then also talk a little bit about how we trying to overcome any tightness we might have in the market so that we get, you know, the best people on the team that we can and then apply the training that we do. So I just wanted to throw that out there for board consideration as we think about the personnel report.
Oh, you turn your mic off.
I turn it off now. Okay. That's the red button goes off.
Yes. I was going to just jump in here and say I agree with Mr. Noling. I mean, there are certain positions on this particular personnel report where we're having to split positions because the ability to bring people in from the outside, there are no actual candidates right now. So there's an urgency to bring in personnel, and it's a difficult process to bring those folks in. So I think it's something we should look at the data and for instance, a psychologist. So those are very finite qualifications that you need for that position. So maybe that's something where you look at a college or you look at a recruiting proactively, talk to a recruiter for someone with an MSW ahead of time so you have some idea of what's out there or whatever the idea is. But, you know, look at the data of is that one particular instance. Because I know right now we're kind of shuffling around for some of those open positions because the candidates aren't out, kind of out in the pool right now. So it's very difficult to bring in someone who we can't find. And also maybe look at the timeline. So it's not due to the lack of effort on our team's team. They're doing a great job trying to bring in people. Our staff is doing an excellent job. So unfortunately, if you can't have that process or that strategic planning ahead of time for those vacancies, you kind of are caught with having to cover a vacancy here in the district. So I think it is something that would be good for the board to look at.
Just a reminder, too, that we don't know when people will be resigning. If you look at dates on things, if you've got people that are resigning from their positions very close to the school year, of course it's more difficult to find somebody to take that position. People have been hired up already over the summer in the spring. I also am very aware that we do many job fairs. They're in contact with many of the universities in the area. We are proactive in bringing people in and hunting down the best candidates we can find. We've always been that way. This is nothing new that has just started happening. But I always just encourage people, look at those resignation dates. Because if someone's resigning their teaching position in August, you're going to have a harder time filling that position across the board, whether it's a third grade position or a school psychologist, because so many of the people have already committed for that next school year. So it's always that's always a good thing to be looking at and watching. We find wonderful people because people want to work here. That's a big part of it. People want to work in this district. And so we do find wonderful people to come in and do that job. But.
And I don't disagree with you, Mrs. Linkemer. I think to Mr. Noling's point, though, I think to look at the data of are there specific what he was just proposing a question to the board. Is there a specific function that, if I'm paraphrasing you properly, is there a specific function that's higher vacancy than others, for instance, or et cetera, et cetera?
And so, I would say that's a question to ask our human resources department. They would be the ones that would have the answers for you on that score to be able to give you the history and the breadth of it, where those decisions have had to be made in the past, where it's been difficult to hire, where it has not been. I'm sure they would be more than happy to share that information with you, sit down with Dr. Pearson. Nothing at all wrong with discussing it at the board table, except that to discuss personnel is something that is a closed session by law event. So we just have to be very careful in how we're going down that road. No problem asking the question at all, and to gather information from our human resources department can be nothing but helpful.
Yeah, and I was
just going to say that Mr. McNally had motioned that he wanted to speak. Okay.
I'm going to tell you that it's a statewide issue. We're not the only district that ever has any difficulty filling positions, especially in some of those critical areas or more specialized areas. The one thing I've always appreciated about this district is that they don't look at what many districts look at, and that is to pull somebody right out of college who's never been in front of a class before. So we are getting some experienced teachers. We're getting teachers who are coming to us with experience, and they're doing that because they want to be here, because this is a good place to work. I'll tell you, just as a teacher myself, the number one thing that I know everyone looks at is stability. They want to be in a stable district. And that's the thing, that really what we need to show is that we're a stable district, and I think we've pretty much done that. So,
thank you, Mr. Noling.
I just wanted to speak to Mrs. Linker's point. I entirely agree. I don't think we're not going to get into specific, you know, individual, but I do think that if we get data, and especially if we've got, you know, we've got somebody that's come over and we start to hear these stories of this was a successful person that really fit well and, you know, really integrated themselves well into the team, and you start to see those data points over and over, I do think it can point you in a direction to say, these are the job fairs that might really be great for us to be involved in. And, you know, if we find ourselves in August and we're scratching our head, you know, then, you know, is there a place that we we can kind of say, maybe we needed to develop bench strength there a little bit. Maybe we need to sort of be doing a little bit more outreach. And I totally agree. I mean, it's a great place to teach, you know, so we want to try to, you know, reach out to the people that we need to be reaching out to bring them on board. That's all I'm saying. And I do think that, you know, I think you're exactly right. I think going back and looking at who resigned and how long had they been on board, and do we know potentially where they went? And who do we hire to backfill that person? And what type of experiences did they have? I think all of that, I think, would be rich to look at and try to figure out if it points us in a direction in terms of, you know, enhancing even our recruiting efforts. That's all I'm saying.
I'm just going to say that it seemed, up until this year, there was no teacher shortage. We had, and so this is a new problem, so it's a new time to look at it. I think it's a good question. I think it's a new business type of topic, you know, and I think that we might kind of put our questions together and ask for an update on human resources. We haven't had that in a long time, and you know, you don't want to take one thing out of context or overblow one thing or not. So I think we need to see the breadth of it, see where we are, see if there are any problems. That would be my thought, but I think I'd like to ask Dr. Pearson if he has thoughts on this.
No, I absolutely think this is a good time to do that. There are really quite a few processes that are in place. I do want to say, you know, the key people for us in our district that do most of the hiring are, of course, our principals. And they spend many, many, many hours interviewing candidates. We have a very rigorous hiring matrix that actually they complain about sometimes that require us to gather quite a bit of data about our candidates before we hire them. And I do think it would be a good opportunity to put it together a presentation for the board so that you can understand the criteria that we use to identify candidates. This is a new season for us that we haven't seen in probably 15 years or so in education. You don't have to, you know, be listening to the news very long to hear the report that it's the lowest unemployment rate. You know, with it being the lowest unemployment rate, that means that people have lots of opportunities. And so, you know, it means for every sector that we're more competitive in identifying people for careers. I also would like to say that it's not a secret that fewer people are going into education. It's not the highest paid sector in the career fields, and so because of that, there are fewer candidates available. So there are a lot of factors that impact our ability to hire, and so we certainly would like to showcase some of the things that our hiring managers do to identify really outstanding candidates, and then to understand the context a little bit better. So we'll put something together for you.
Can I ask just a follow-up question? Would you agree with the statement that we're embarking on a teacher shortage right now, or a shortage in any of the functional areas?
I would say that yes. And if you look at the media, there are districts that have started school that don't have teachers in classrooms right now, because they have not been able to find qualified candidates. Now, we are a destination district, and so people do want to work and teach here. So we're not going to feel the impact of that kind of shortage at the same level that some other districts might feel that. And so, but we do, there are certain areas where there just aren't enough candidates. School psychologists were brought up earlier. That's an extremely rigorous preparation program to even get that certification. And then because of the emphasis that's been placed on mental health in education over the last few years, many schools who used to not have school psychologists in their district are now making it a priority to hire some staff in that area. So, you know, there are certain areas that are hard to hire based on just how many people are being credentialed. And so I think it would be really a good opportunity for us just to look at that again as a board, and to have a chance to kind of look at some of the trends and then to see kind of what our processes are.
Anybody else right now? Mr. Nulling, I think what would work well is we'll just bring this up one more time in new business so that's in its proper, it's in a good place, it'll be codified, and we'll determine what to do with it at that time, if that's okay. We won't talk about it, we'll just decide. No,
I thought that was the right place, I apologize. Yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, I'd like to know that when the notes come, the minutes come out later, that under new business, it's properly noted in the, okay? So we thank you, though. Obviously, it's a topic of interest to the board. So I would like to ask, we have the motion and the second on the personnel report. Any other conversation? None heard. If we would take the vote, please.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Weibel.
Yes.
Mrs. Fairgreath.
Yes.
Mrs. Linkmer?
Yes.
Mr. Manheim?
Yes.
Mr. McNally?
Yes.
Mr. Noling?
Excitedly, yes.
I can't wait. Yes. For information, we have our Freedom of Information Act requests. We have the CUSD 303 financial report for July 2018, and Mid Valley financial report for July 2018, and then the listed in the board book is the annual administrator and teacher salary and benefits report for last school year, 2018. Next item is for discussion. It's a small discussion, but it was kind of got lost at our retreat, and not lost, but didn't get addressed at the retreat. So I would like to ask board members if they would like to continue visiting schools for board meetings. We go to a different school. We have been going to a different school every other month and trying to mix it up with the levels of school. Or oftentimes something happening at a particular school. So that's what we've been doing, and I would just like to ask if board members would like to continue.
I would say yes.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. And I'm
perfectly fine with that.
Perfect.
With this, yes.
Yes.
I mean, it was a discussion we had a couple years ago,
yeah.
And I saw both sides of the issue, but I do think it's good for us to get out stuff we're in charge of.
Absolutely. Thank you. I knew you would all feel that way, but since we really didn't talk about it at the time, it does require a little bit more work, a lot more work probably on the part of Mr. Mark Smith, I'm sorry, and Matt Smith. and Mrs. Ratchford, but thank you. I think that's a great choice. And so if you would continue to line up some great schools where things are happening, there might be particular times when it's particularly feasible or
yes,
important.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
The one concern that people had expressed, or that at least one board member had expressed in the past, is people not always knowing where the board meeting is. Of course, if you look at board book, you know where it is. The one thing I would say is if maybe we had a clickable link that at least just gave the address, because some people don't know where all the schools are. So that when the board meeting is at Pearson Creek, you click it and it'll tell you this is where Pearson Creek is.
And I was going to say, in the case of Wildwood, that you have a detailed map.
Yeah.
For people that have never.
Okay. Great suggestion.
That might be, that's doable. Thank you. And you're right. That would be the only negative I can think of, beside maybe the time and cost involved. Thank you. So now we will go on to new business, and I would like to just start with Mr. Noling.
Yeah, what I said earlier.
So, go.
Yeah, I would just like to see see if the board has an interest in looking at our personnel history and practices. Is that a good title?
Okay. That's perfect. And so I think that many board members agreed with that, so we'll move ahead with that. And I would imagine business services, and I would imagine in the next, yes, Mr.?
We'll find the most appropriate place, depending on which agenda has the most room. It could also be a learning and teaching topic. So.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I won't tell you where it should go.
That might be an LMT item, although I'm reluctant to say it because I don't want a six-hour meeting.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's getting a six-hour. Well, in the near future.
Yep, we'll get it together.
Thank you. And it's good to think about, because it is a whole change from the way we've what we've experienced in the last 15 years or more. And then, is there another business new business item?
There is, Madam President. Thank you. I just have a quick piece of new business. First, I'd like to just say how proud I am of this board, Mr. Vice President, Mr. Manheim, and what we've done to collaborate with other municipalities in our intergovernmental agreements with the Park Board, with the Library and Park District. We've done in different ways, especially with the Norris Center. In our collaborative spirit, I'd like to work with our governing partners again and carry forward that that need by discussing at the next meeting a request that we had from the City of St. Charles. And as I found out today, it wasn't necessarily a direct request, but a request that they made at their meeting in February via a motion. So they went through and their February 5th meeting, and they made a motion to meet as a joint committee with the school board, and they had a unanimous motion that was carried. So I thought it might be a good idea for us to discuss if that was something we wanted to do. They were specifically speaking about the help me out.
The formula
for
specifics for single family
for land cash. I always want to call it taxes. Okay, I got you. For land cash, I don't know why I have a brain freeze on that all the time, but for land cash, and some of that has been resolved, but I think their interest is still to talk about land cash. We're partnering with them on safety right now. We've talked with them about communication goals and some things that I think that are very cohesive with the city. So I think that would be appropriate, but I just want to see what the rest of the board thought and if we wanted to put it on for an agenda or discuss it or kind of see how it goes from there.
I think I'll just chime in. I just wanted to let board members that I never received an invitation either from the mayor or written on this topic. So it just was something they did, and it wasn't until I read the minutes. I know that they do want to be open dialogue with us, but I don't know how that fits in to some sort of a joint session. I asked just Mrs. Linkmer, just because she's the most veteran person here, if she can ever, she ever was in on a city council school board joint session, because I didn't remember it in the last 20 years. So, sorry about, I don't know if you want to speak to.
I don't remember one in the last 20 years. That was her question to me. Have I ever been involved? No, I haven't.
Your question to me was if I'd ever been involved in any type of a joint meeting with the city council in the last 20 years, and I said no, I had not.
I guess I would just throw out, is there any reason that we would not want to participate or entertain this idea at some agreed upon frequency? I don't know if there's anything from a board bylaws or IASB or, I don't know those pieces, but putting that aside, is there any reason that we wouldn't?
Well, in my mind, if there's business to, but if there's not business, I don't understand the reason, because we cannot overlap on each other at all. We cannot make decisions for the other group.
Right.
If there's actual business that we need to discuss, sure. But
yeah,
just,
I agree.
Just
we
to
should
set
have an
meetings,
agenda.
But
yeah.
Just to set meetings yeah, yeah. to set a meeting, that I don't understand.
I don't think it was to set a meeting, just to clarify. There was business they wanted to discuss at the board level, not at the administration level, and I think that was their goal. And that's what the minutes reflect, is the councilman would like to speak at the board level. So, there's a copy of the minutes. We could certainly forward them to the board to review. But it was something that is out there and is public, so I just felt like it was appropriate for our board to respond professionally and figure out, to be collaborative. They've sat with a joint session with the other governing bodies. We're the only governing body that hasn't participated. So that is something that I think we should address.
Is there any way we can get, a sense of what they would like to accomplish in the meeting, if there is business to discuss, and then put it on and for us to talk about it downstream? I mean, is that to consider it?
You mean together, or they want us to discuss, or you mean to discuss together?
I don't know why they want to get together. So if we got a sense of this is why we want to get together, and then we could talk about do we want to do do we want to get together? Is there something for us to be talking about?
And this is from February.
Agenda.
So we're now 7 months down the road? So that's what I want to know.
I just said, so to paraphrase, a proposed agenda. So if we could get something from the council saying, you know, this is what we would envision for an agenda for a meeting. Because to your point, yeah, I mean, it would be most productive if we had business to talk about.
So, and just to be really, you know, specific, they had a vote, and that's what they wanted to do. But in the meantime, I believe, staff's worked on this equation that has to do with student density and the land cash issue, student density and single-family and multifamily housing. I found it to be a pretty specific staff-type issue. So since that time, I haven't had any, at that time, and since that time, I haven't had a specific request to meet for any particular topic or anything. I'm not getting invitations all the time. wanted you to know that.
You did have some discussion with them at the quarterly meeting, so, about this topic.
Yes. Mayor Rogina wanted to make sure that we had open lines of communication, which I took that as one thing. I didn't take that as a joint meeting, especially since it hadn't really been done. I really didn't know, you know, there was no topic that was presented. It was just a, let's just keep working together, talking together thing.
To that point, we have the intergovernmental meeting once a month. It's once a month, right? Mm-hmm. I've attended a couple. I think that it probably, at least in that regard, maybe board members, when possible, attending that is a good idea. You know, going, because I sat with you at that one. I've sat at a couple of them where I've been kind of the representative, and I've sat at a couple where there have been a couple of us there. I want to have a reason to have a meeting. I don't really like to have meetings just to have meetings, so I want to have a reason, and it sounds like there were some specific items, and again, it sounds like some of those have been resolved. As those things come up, if it's appropriate, you know, it's something that we need to discuss. That particular issue sounds like something that we wouldn't really have been able to answer for them at a meeting anyway. We would have had to turn and ask, really, Dr. Pearson and Dr. Chapman anyway. So I'm not averse to the idea of having collaborative meetings. I just want to have, you know, a defined purpose for those meetings.
Well, I think it's safe to say that several people have talked about maybe asking them for an agenda and what they want to discuss and see if that sits with people. So do we want to do that?
Well, I see we've got intergovernmental this week. Maybe we can talk to somebody about what this is all about. And if it's still an issue that's ongoing in their mind, because it is a while downstream, so is it still an issue? And if so, what is it? And then we could, you know, maybe have a discussion.
Very good. I suggested, I had spoken to Mrs. Weibel today because she had brought it up, and I thought I can call Dr. Mayor Rogina and ask simply, just as easily. You're right. Intergovernmental is this week. I'm not that far ahead of myself. 2 days, but I can. If you want me to wait till then and ask them to the mayor's face, if he specifically has something going on right now. If you want me to do that, I'll do that. If you don't want me to do that, then I won't do that.
Either way.
I think that's fine. Either way, I think that's fine.
So just so I can act in the board's interest to ask if the City Council of St. Charles would still like to have a joint session. We're not saying we're agreeing to it. We're just saying, do they still want that? And is there any agenda and some specific gains that we could achieve out of this?
And I would just say, let's not forget then that we would need to be also open to meetings in West Chicago. Mm. We would need to be open to meetings in South Elgin, Campton Hills. So this is not a small thing. So it's a piece of a larger of a larger piece. So just to recognize that if we're doing this with one government body, then we need to be open to all the other ones as well.
And that's a fair point, Mrs. Lankemar. This is the one governing body that is 100% 303, though. The other ones are portions.
Mm-hmm. But we're thinking of us, you know, our client.
But,
our
correct. It is. We have five municipalities.
Yeah.
Correct.
So that's why if I ask that question of the mayor, he might be assuming that we are amenable, and we haven't made that decision yet, have we? We're just asking if they're interested. Okay.
Well, and I think the follow-up is, what would the agenda look like?
Mm-hmm.
So if they still have things to talk about, what would that agenda then look like? And that's, mm-hmm. I think, what we would base our decision on, or at least mm-hmm. I would.
Okay. I think I have my answer, so I'll do that on Thursday. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
And is there any other new business? That was a big category today.
Wonderful. Well, we do not have a closed session today, and so may I have a motion? Oh.
Okay. So we do not have anything for closed session today. So may I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Mr. McNally.
Second.
And Mr. Mannheim. All in favor? Oh, no, we have to. Aye.
Can we go back?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As long as everybody says it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are you all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? None heard. Motion is adjourned. Thank you all for coming. Have a great school year.